Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who has a vast collection of vintage DC and Marvel comic books, and ironically lives in Minnesota, where his favorite NBA team, the LA Lakers, originated, Dave Denniston.
Well, welcome back, my friends, to another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. This is your host, Dave Denniston. Well, I am honored to have on today a gentleman that has been practicing as a periodontist full time and has really developed a love for real estate. He has a blog, he has a website, he has all kinds of great information. But of course, want to learn about his journey and why he's doing what he's doing and how this whole thing has come about and what his plans for the future are. Please help me welcome Dr. Jeff Anzalone. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, thanks very much for having me on your podcast. Really enjoy listening to it. Typically, I listen to my podcast when I'm on the treadmill after work. So thanks for all you do for the doctors out there, for sure.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's always fun to connect with people and appreciated you reaching out to me and having the chance to have this chat together, Jeff. Well, give me a little bit of a background in terms of you. You told me beforehand that everyone's jumping around in Louisiana with LSU winning. Or were you born in Louisiana or where are you from?
Yeah, born and raised in Louisiana, and as I was telling you a little bit before the call, we had a late night last night after the big game, the national championship, but it was well worth it. A long time coming.
So were you raised in a house of dentists or surgeons, or what kind of background do you have there, my friend?
His dad and his uncle, back in 1941, started a hardware store, Star Hardware, which today is still, my dad is running it to this day.
Good for him.
One of those mom and pop stores, you know, he's the type of person that can fix anything. Unfortunately, that gene did not pass on to me.
I relate to that.
I would love that, but I mean, if something needs to be fixed, we know to call him. So I think growing up in a household, with him and seeing he had a lot of brothers and sisters, very frugal family, always saw him pay cash for everything, never used a credit card. So I didn't really know any other way, didn't take many vacations, maybe took one a year to the beach, and that was it. So had that frugality background, always seeing it, always definitely lived below their means, for sure. One of his brothers is a dentist, and another one is a physician, a pathologist. And, when growing up, as I started getting interested in healthcare, I would talk with them more and more. Plus, I had friends in my hometown, Louisiana, that also had dads that were physicians and dentists. So that kind of got me going down that track.
Hmm. And with your dad owning a small business, like they did and do, was that something where you would be going into the hardware store and helping out with stuff as you were growing up, or what was that like?
I didn't do it too much. Mostly at the end of the year when he needed help with inventory. So he would go in and, call out all the inventory, and I would write it down and had to fill in the blanks and then turn that into the accountant, which I'm sure, most of the stuff now is computerized, even though he still does not to this day have a computer there.
Oh my gosh. Wow. But
I think for me, I got more of the entrepreneurial spirit and figured out I couldn't really work for anybody else due to the fact that I started mowing lawns when I was about 12 or 13 years old. Just started off mowing some yards you know, down the street from where I live. You know, I'd push the mower down the street, and he would, my dad would help me bring some of the other equipment, the little weed eater and blower. And then when I got my license at 15, I started loading it in the back of, had one of those Chevy Blazers that I don't think they make anymore. And eventually that started growing, purchased a trailer, put all my equipment on the trailer. And actually during high school and college, I was able to, you know, grow the business. I was doing, you know, anywhere from 35 to 40 yards a week. So, you know, as a high school and college person, that was a pretty good, decent income, you know, coming in. So I think that really inspired me to want to have my own business someday.
I love that. And what kind of financial lessons did your dad grow you up with? Like, did he force you to pay for things? Were they pretty tight with money? Were they pretty loose with money? You know, what was that like growing up?
They very tight with money. Unfortunately, I would always hear, you know, hey, we can't afford that, we can't do that. And maybe that was the case, I don't know. So I think for me, and I wrote an article about having a scarcity versus an abundance mindset not that long ago. And I think I've always grown up with that scarcity mindset. Like, there's only so much to go around, which is definitely not the case. But yeah, we, think, you know, things were tight, but we never wanted for anything, you know? So, and I think that's, you know, mainly coming from growing up, he came from a big Italian family, and his family had to do the same things as well.
Interesting. So you're now graduated from college at, let's say, let's fast forward a little bit here in your story. Sounds like you were able to work quite a bit and save up. Did you have much in the way of loans coming out of undergrad, going into your graduate program, or what was that like?
No, luckily I was able to get a scholarship to my local college, and also anything that didn't cover, my parents were able to pay for that for me, which at the time it really wasn't that expensive, but I am grateful that they allowed me to graduate, go into dental school without any undergraduate loans.
Nice. Well, that is a big blessing that some of us have and some of us certainly don't. So did you want to get to be an endodontist pretty much? You knew that going through your undergrad, or when did that passion for doing that came up?
I think after I graduated dental school, I did a hospital-based residency at the VA hospital in Biloxi, Mississippi. Did a lot of surgery there, and actually went and shadowed a local periodontist that was in the Biloxi area, and saw kind of what he did and said, hey, you know, maybe I can try this route, you know, and you know, started doing more of the different types of surgeries, got interested in it. And then luckily was able to get accepted into a program at LSU in New Orleans. And then 3 years later, I completed training.
Nice. So the journey from undergrad through completing your training was that, let's see, 10 years?
Let's see, undergrad was 4 years. Dental school was 4 years. 1 year at the VA at residency, and then another three. What is that? Four, four, and four. Is that 12?
12. 12. All right. So at that point, you're 30 now, getting into practice. Did you join someone else's practice? Did you start your own? What happened as you finished with all the training?
Well, unfortunately, the practice that I was supposed to join here in my hometown, they kind of strung me along a little bit, thinking that I was going to be joining them. But right before graduation, they decided to take away their offer. So that was, as you can imagine, a big disappointment. Mm-hmm. We had I had close to $300,000 in student loan debt. A 2-month-old and an interest-only mortgage on a home. Ooh. That I knew the local banker I went to school with his son in high school, and he said, "Oh yeah, you're going to be joining this practice." You know, this was before the 2008 crash, and with the housing market. So you know, they were giving out loans to probably squirrels running down the road.
You know? Anything that could fog a mirror, including deers and squirrels.
Yep. So they were like, "Hey, yeah, no problem. We'll give you this just whenever you can start paying on it or whatever, we'll convert it over to a traditional mortgage." So that's what I did. But like I said, the deal fell through. Luckily, I had another dental specialist reach out to me. He took me under his wings and he showed me the ropes. And for the first 2 years, I was able to rent space from him, not have to go into any further amount of practice loan debt, fortunately. Mm. Mm. And after doing that, building came available and I moved out, bought my own building. There was dental equipment already in there. It was used dental equipment, and still practicing there to this day.
Wow. So once it was a rough beginning, but once you settled in, really gotta thrive. One of the things I often talk about as a big piece of advice for those that are in private practice is the power of buying your own building or buying into the surgery center that you do business in, so that you can start reaping rewards. And it's something you can easily understand in real estate. You know, there's so many things that physicians don't have time to understand, but I think buying your own building is a wonderful way to go. Was that something that you ended up doing? Did you end up buying your own building? You know, tell us about that process.
Yeah, the building that I purchased, there was a previous dentist that was moving out to build a bigger office. So I ended up buying that building, and that was back in 2008. So I've had that building since then.
Okay, great. Well, you bought it at the height, right? I guess, or as things were starting to fall down. Well, was that a difficult time to get credit and get the building, or was that kind of before that all rigmarole started?
I think that was before that really started going down. So it really wasn't that big of a deal. Really, it really wasn't that expensive as well. The building, you know, it's a little 1,700-1,800 square foot building, so it's not anything that's humongous, for sure.
Got it. And what's your take, Jeff, on that advice? You know, of buying your own building or buying that you practice in. Do you agree? Disagree? You know, what do you think about that?
I think it's based on the individual circumstances the person has. You know, if they have a good thriving practice. If you have a practice and you're moving locations, you know, I had a pretty decent thriving practice. So when I moved over, you know, I pretty much knew that the income could more than cover the note. But if you're getting right out of training and not only do you have to buy a practice, but then a lot of times when these people sell practices, they have a one fee for buying the practice, and then they have another fee for buying the building.
Sure. Yep.
So I think it just depends on the person's unique situation, you know, regarding their debt, regarding their experience with practicing. You know, a lot of times I've heard that people will buy a practice or associate with a practice, pay down a lot of debt, get the experience, and then later that's always an option, you know, to do. Because my opinion is, if you number one, we're already starting late in the game. Most of us are in our 30s.
Yeah.
Number two, we're starting way behind the eight ball. Most of us have a lot of debt. Number three, when we get out, people think, "Oh, you're a doctor. You need to start living like that." And it's like, why are you driving that truck? Why are you not a member of the country club? So you hear this so much, it's like, well, crap, I guess I need to do that. So. And it's just like we're always struggling. We never get ahead because of all these expectations, plus with us starting so late. So that's you know, a lot of times when I speak with people that reach out to me on my blog, you know, I'm telling them all this, and they're wanting to get into all this stuff, all these investments and all that. I'm like, you know what? You're close to $1 million in debt. You need to focus on that first before you start living it up. Mm-hmm. So, and thing is, you know, I can tell them from my experience, you know, I had the option. I could either take one road or take the other. And I'm glad I chose the option of getting out of debt. And now it's definitely paid off for sure.
Well, that's a big deal. So tell me about, you know, now with being debt free, and you got into real estate at some point outside of buying the building for your practice and buying your own primary residence. Walk me through that journey. What's that been like?
After I became debt free and had set some other pretty large financial goals for myself, I was able to luckily accomplish that by when I turned 40.
Nice.
So I, at that time, I started looking at my portfolio, and it was roughly about 95% in the market, you know, with index funds, that sort of thing, retirement accounts. So number one, I really wasn't diversified too much outside the market. But number two, I realized that, you know what, I only had one source of income, my practice income. And as somebody that practices by themselves, you know, I couldn't take off, you know, if I wanted to take off a month for the summer and take my kids, you know, we love going to Montana or out in the mountains, you know, I couldn't do that because the practice would shut down.
Right.
So, you know, that was a big thing for me. Plus, you know, what if something happened to me, if I got hurt, you know, I'm still active. I still play sports. You know, what would happen? So I started looking around and really got interested into real estate and talked to several local people here, investors that are friends and that do it full time. And after talking to them and actually going to look at some properties and seeing what you have to deal with, I was like, you know what? I don't have time nor the desire to be an active real estate investor. Mm. I don't want to deal with tenants. I want to go do what I do best. That's see patients and then have a life outside of that, which led me into finding and learning more about passive real estate opportunities. And the ones that I started off with were ones that were online, some crowdfunding deals with a couple of sites. Did that for a little bit. Smaller deals, you know, like 3,000 here, 5,000 there, got comfortable with it. Then decided to step it up into an equity deal that was in Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma. It was an apartment complex there. It was a syndication where basically you pool your money in with other investors, and they go in and they have somebody that's supposedly a general partner or an operator that finds these deals. They put them together. They're supposed to rehab them. They're supposed to manage them, etc. Unfortunately, that deal did not work out well at all. I wound up losing my entire investment.
Mm.
But, you know, I always now, you know, we're all going to make mistakes. We're all going to have failures. And I always try to look at, okay, what did I learn? And what can I do moving forward to not make these mistakes again? Mm-hmm. And the main one was, you know what? Back then, I had no business doing that because I did not know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And I did not know how to properly evaluate not only the property, but who was the one that was sponsoring the property.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward a couple of years later, now I have been successfully investing in these syndications because, number one, I understand what I'm investing in. So that's one of the rules I always tell people. Never invest in anything you don't understand, whether it's a stock market, real estate, lemonade stand, whatever. And then also, I always recommend that you find someone, one of these general partners or operators that that you can trust, and that's a huge deal. The ones I only have just a select few that I personally invest with, and this is after interviewing and seeking out, you know, several of them, and there's only a few that I will invest with. The analogy that I give is, you know, if you've been going to a dentist for your whole life, and you go in for a checkup and they say, hey, you need some work done on this tooth back here, you know, you trust that person, right? You're not going to second guess them. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's kind of the same thing with this. You know, once you understand their philosophy, you know, I have my own personal philosophy and the types of deals I look for that aren't real risky, more of a value add, multifamily type situation. So whenever a deal comes out, yeah, I'm going to look at it. You know, sometimes I'll do a walkthrough of the property with the investor, you know, with the operator. But so I know that, hey, this person's putting money in the game too. You know, they have skin in the game. So once I kind of learned what to do, who to trust, it made investing in these a whole lot better. And since then, I haven't made another one of those large mistakes like I had in the past.
So do you feel like it's always a little bit of a conundrum to get started, right? Because in order to understand something, in many ways, I think you have to have experience with it. So yes, how do you get experience with something that you don't have any experience with?
That's a great question. And that's one of the reasons why I started the blog that I did, because I wanted to be the person that, number one, was, you know, like a lot of the healthcare professionals, you know, still seeing patients, still want to spend time with their family, but knows real estate investing, knows these different operators, and could be that trusted person to help guide them through the process. And if you go to my site, it's debtfreedr.com. I have a tab at the top that's nothing but real estate investing articles. So as I started learning along the way, I started writing stuff down. So I want to educate people on that. And, you know, people always are calling me or reaching out to me, probably like they do you as well, to get information or emailing. You know, I just want to be that trusted source so I could teach them, hey, you know, this is what's involved, and they have enough information, just like we give our patients information about their condition so that they can make the best decision that's going to be for them in their particular situation.
So obviously people can read and get information that way. What do you think, Jeff, in terms of the mistakes that you've made in analyzing these people? Because I know one of the biggest concerns I would have is a Bernie Madoff type situation where someone just runs off with your money, which is easier to do in these kinds of syndication deals than even like the whole Madoff thing was just crazy. But, and that wasn't real estate related, but there were a lot of scandals like that back 12 years ago when we were going through the crisis. So how can someone evaluate these operators? What sort of criteria should they be using to understand whether this is a good investment or bad investment?
Well, that's a great question. I think that you should, number one, know what you're investing in before you even find an operator. Find what you want to do, whether it be storage units or mobile home parks, apartment complexes, and that sort of thing. And then, seek out find different operators. You know, the best thing to do would be to, you know, get online. You could search for some. And then if you find a few, you can ask them, and they should gratefully supply you with other investors and start talking to other investors. And when you start talking with other investors, you'll get the lowdown on them. And sometimes those investors will actually steer you in a different direction. Maybe somebody else that they've used instead of, you know, this one person. Like I had somebody one time that I talked to, and instead of them steering me back to where I thought I needed to go, they actually told me to go somewhere else because they were doing a whole lot more deals with someone else. Mm. And then, and, you know, just do your due diligence. You want to see their track record. You want to see the what their criteria is. You want to see what, you know, kind of what areas of the country that they're investing in and why. So, you know, there's a bunch of different things that you can do, kind of like if you were researching to buy like an expensive piece of equipment. You know, you're probably going to look for multiple places to buy from. Then you're going to start looking at reviews, and you may reach out to some people that have purchased that particular, you know, piece of equipment. So it's kind of the same process, except on a little bit larger scale.
Okay. Very good. Very good. And any stories you can tell us about the good investments, bad investments, you know, what's gone great and what's gone badly for you?
Well, by far the worst deal that's gone, and I spoke a little bit earlier about the apartment complex in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And the main reason that it failed was I did not, again, do my due diligence and realize that where it was located, it was in a neighborhood that was crime infested, that people were moving out left and right, and the occupancy rate was really low. So, you know, if I know that, you know, the people that I work with, they would never look in an area like that. They would know, you know, what they're doing. They're only staying in areas that have tremendous growth. You know, Amazon, Best Buy, all these people are moving in. You know, a lot of my deals are in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It's just booming. Irving, Texas, great school district. So once you start looking at that, and most of the time they kind of stay in that area. I didn't know anything about Tulsa. I didn't know anything about this neighborhood. And people were moving out faster than they were coming in. The operator was putting in too much money to recoup his investment, and eventually, unfortunately, everything failed. So that was by far the worst part of it. Just about every deal that I'm in, or actually all the deals that I'm currently in, they're all paying exactly what the operators have promised to pay. And we're basically, if you add up everything after you get your distributions every month, plus whenever the property sells, a profit split, we're just about doubling our money every 5 years, which it's, to me, that's pretty impressive, as you well know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, you have some great resources on your website, Jeff. I was perusing through some of the articles on debtfreedr.com. And I definitely would recommend it to people, you know, just for honesty. I think, you know, you talked about the good, you talked about the bad. There was great education on some of those areas you talked about, everything from apartments to the Burr strategy to all kinds of wonderful knowledge of golden nuggets for people to pick up. Anything, Jeff, you want to point out to us on the website that I glossed over here?
Yeah, I would encourage people to, there's two different things that you can do to sign up. You could sign up, put your email address in, and every time that I post an article, which is typically 1 to 2 a week, they will go straight to your email box. If you want to learn more about the syndications that I'm investing in, and the ability to have access to them, because not everybody is able to invest in them. It's for accredited investors only. At the top right, there's a sign up button where I've created what they call a doctor investor circle. I do have people that are not doctors that also will reach out to me and want to know if they can join. So absolutely, as long as you meet the certain criteria, again, of being an accredited investor. And for those that may not know what that is, that is basically set up by the SEC, the Security and Exchange Commission, stating that someone makes at least $200,000 a year or more, or they, if they're married, make at least $300,000 a year or more, or have a net worth of at least $1 million, excluding their residence. And the reason why they do that is to protect the investor, because somebody that's accredited, that has this good income or net worth, well, if they were to get in one of these deals and lose their money, it would hurt, but it wouldn't be the end of the world. They wouldn't go bankrupt, more than likely, versus somebody that doesn't make that kind of money. They put all of their life savings in one of these deals, then that could definitely affect them a lot. So that's the criteria. And if you want to invest in any of these, they're for accredited investors only. So if someone signs up for the Dr. Investor Circle, it's free. I usually just jump on a quick call with them. We talk about what they're looking for, what their financial goals are. I answer any questions that they have, and then we go from there.
All right. Well, cool deal, Jeff. Any other final thoughts in terms of your journey, your story, that you want to leave here with us today?
I would just encourage you people that if you only have one source of income and you really want to reach financial freedom sooner than later, I would start learning about and focusing on creating some multiple streams of income, typically passive income. Again, you can go online, you can search for it. I have plenty of articles on my website. But then when you start doing it, again, I encourage you, before you invest in anything, make sure you really know what you're getting into. Don't do it just because everybody else is doing it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people know about investing, but they still use a financial advisor because, they may know about investing, but they're not going to do it. So, I encourage you to learn about it. And then, there's plenty of people out there that can help you.
Perfect. Well, wonderful advice, Jeff. Thank you so much for being with us and mentoring us the last 30 minutes. And that, my friends, wraps up another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. And of course, as always, remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle.